The shadow bent. Her oddly beautiful green face appeared in the open doorway. Charlene screamed, jumped up, and fled the teepee, suddenly visible. She surprised the witch, who reeled back instinctively. Maleficent lunged at Charlene with her skinny arms and bony fingers, but Charlene was much too fast for her. Maleficent got only a piece of the girl's black t-shirt. The shirt stretched, and Charlene was nearly pulled off her feet, but the shirt tore at the last second, leaving a scrap of cloth in Maleficent's green hand. Willa fled right behind Charlene. The witch missed her entirely. Finn saw that Maleficent's eyes were eerily bright. She had surprisingly pretty, high cheekbones with a high forehead, black hair, and a strong chin. She wore a strange headdress, like two twisting horns that rose from the hood of her cape. Her inquisitive face explored the empty teepee.
"Why can't I see you, you poor simple fools? Have you got magic of your own? Do you?"
Never taking her eyes off the inside of the teepee, she crouched. Her twisted green fingers with red nails couldn't keep still. She scooped up a fist of sandy dirt from just outside the doorway. Finn kept in shadow, remaining invisible. He moved carefully and quietly toward the door.
"Now, Finn Whitman, you shall deal with me,"
the witch said, casting an arc of sand inside. Briefly, a ghostly image of Philby's left side appeared as the sand struck and stuck to him. A clever witch at that, Finn thought. Philby brushed off most of the sand, but not all. His ghostly image remained. Maleficent stepped over the lip and into the teepee, heading right for Philby. Finn jumped forward and shoved her to the dirt. It felt like he had rammed into a wall of ice.
"Run!"
Finn shouted. Philby jumped over the witch's legs and sprang out of the teepee. He landed in the dirt, rolled, and came to his feet. Finn also tripped over the lower lip of the teepee's door. He too went down, face first, into the dirt. As Finn came to his feet, a crow flew from the teepee. The bird dove for Finn, its talons like dinner forks. Finn blocked the attack with his forearm and was off at a run. The crow shrieked, rose high, circled once, and dove again, a flutter of feathers. Finn ran hard and fast, thinking, "She will not scare me. She will not scare me." The bird dove again, this time striking the back of Finn's head, its talons scratching his scalp. Finn headed for the shore. He hit the water in a racer's dive, knowing the crow couldn't follow. But the crow tucked its wings, lowered its head, and dove for the water's black surface. Finn heard a big splash, and then silence behind him. Charlene, Philby, and Willa, already in the water, swam to shore and clambered up onto the bank and quickly out of sight. Finn realized the bird, the witch, had gone into the water, but had never come out. At that very moment, he felt something wrap around his ankle. Slimy and cold, it dragged him under. A giant black eel. It climbed up Finn's body, wrapped around his middle, and squeezed, and squeezed. Finn tore at it with his hands, but it was like trying to grab a giant slithering bar of soap. The more he fought against it, the more it squeezed. He felt the wind being choked out of him. He couldn't breathe. He was losing consciousness. Finn heard a loud whine, like an engine. The eel's grip slackened just enough to allow Finn to take a breath. Above him, Finn saw Philby in one of the jungle boats. Philby held the boat's outboard motor tilted just above the water, its spinning propeller aimed at the eel. As the propeller was just about to cut the eel like a meat grinder, the beast released its hold of Finn and slithered back down under the dark water. Finn pulled himself from the water as Philby ran the boat up on shore.
"We gotta go! Right now!" Philby shouted to the girls. "We gotta get back to the apartment and get out of here!"
"Maybeck!" Finn said.
"We can't wait!"
Philby shouted.
"That's what I've been telling you?"
Charlene said.
"I hate leaving him behind,"
Willa said, worried.
"We all do,"
Philby said.
"But they know we're here. We got to leave."
Finn hardly heard any of this. He was not thinking of the water, nor the crow, nor the eel. He was instead thinking only this one thing, over and over. "She knew my name. She knew my name." 21. Amanda stayed in the lead on her bike. Thankfully, she hadn't asked any questions, and he took this as a sign they were becoming really good friends. He told her only that he had to see Jelly, and that she was welcome to come along if she wanted. They locked their bikes beneath a sign that read, "Crazy Glaze."
"You're awfully quiet today," she said.
"Yeah," was all Finn could think to say.
"You want me to keep her busy while you check around back? Is that about it?"
He nodded. Amanda entered the store, glancing back at Finn with a worried expression. Finn found two fire escapes out back, made of slatted iron, servicing several doors. Finn heard Jelly's distinctive voice through an open window that was followed by Amanda asking after Terry.
"Terry's not feeling well," Jelly said.
"I brought him some homework," Amanda said.
It was a white lie, because in fact she and Finn went to a different school than Maybeck, but she needed a reason to see him.
"That's sweet of you, girl. I'll be sure to pass it along," Amanda said.
"Is it the flu?"
"Not exactly the flu," Jelly answered. "You want to leave him homework, that'd be fine, but right now I've got a lot to do."
"Can I help you?" Amanda offered. "Can I fill in for Terry if he's not feeling well?"
"Well, Terry's asleep upstairs. That'd be very good of you, Amanda. Thank you for offering. I'm happy to pay you, though I can't pay much."
Finn climbed up the fire escape. The rail was hot to the touch. If caught, Finn wasn't sure what excuse he'd use, but he'd think of something. At the first landing, there was a normal-looking door. Finn knocked gently. Nothing. Then he tried the doorknob. It turned, but he didn't dare open it. That was just plain wrong, and he couldn't bring himself to do it. Then the obvious hit him. That other landing below the adjacent windows. If he could make the jump. Finn climbed over the rail of the landing, hung on, and jumped. His fingers hooked around the railing. He hung on for dear life, pulled himself over, and collapsed below the first window. He got to his feet and peered in. He saw a television room with some very nice pottery scattered around. The next window, considerably smaller, was covered on the inside by a thick curtain. A bathroom, perhaps. Finn moved to the third window and peered inside. Maybeck. He was asleep in bed, with the shade up and lights on, Finn noted, rolled over with his back to Finn. He had on the same shirt he'd been wearing the night before. Next to the bed, on a side table, Finn noticed a thermometer, bulbed down in a glass of water, a face cloth folded into a strip 3 inches wide, and a copy of the Bible. Finn knocked gently on the glass. Maybeck didn't stir. Finn tried again a little louder. Maybeck didn't budge. If Finn knocked any harder, he thought he'd break the glass. Instead, he tested the window. It opened a crack. Again, he faced going inside uninvited. Again, he couldn't bring himself to do it. But he did slide the window up and stick his head through.
"Maybeck!"
he whispered harshly.
"Maybeck! Wake up!" "Finn!"
It was Amanda's voice, behind and below him. Finn bumped his head on the window frame as he turned to look for her.
"Jelly's coming up there!"
Amanda warned frantically.
"She heard you!"
Finn ducked out the bedroom window. He could hear Jelly coming up the stairs. The footsteps were close now. Finn slid Maybeck's window shut, ducked, and hurried to the railing. He climbed over, paused, and jumped. For a fraction of a second, it seemed that he'd misjudged the distance, that he would fall, crashing in a pile of broken bones right in front of Amanda. But he made it. He climbed over the railing and hurried down to ground level.
"Finn! Finn Whitman!"
Jelly hollered from the upstairs balcony.
"What are you doing here?"
"Hello, Jelly,"
Finn called back.
"You sneaking around back here?"
"No, ma'am.
'Cause that's what it looks like."
"I need to talk to Terry," Finn confessed. "It's important."
"You can't. Terry's sick, not well."
"Sick or asleep? He won't wake up, will he?"
Amanda snapped her head in Finn's direction. Jelly said,
"You stay right where you are, young man."
Jelly took her time.
"Listen,"
she said, emerging through the back door.
"This is not something I want going around school. You understand?"
She met eyes with them both.
"Terry's got some kind of sleeping sickness."
Finn gasped.
"We can't wake him up. He's not got a fever, not been bitten by anything, no sweats or shakes."
She took a long look up at Maybeck's bedroom window.
"Doctor says to let him be one more night. Tomorrow, he goes to the hospital and they start doing tests. But I'm saying my prayers. Nothing seems wrong with him. Doctor says he's fine in all the important ways."
"He's stuck asleep?"
Amanda said.
"That's a funny way to put it," Jelly said. "But yes."
Finn wanted to kick Amanda, but she didn't know what she'd said. He told her nothing about the night before. Maybeck was still crossed over. Finn struggled to figure out what that meant.
"Can't wake him up,"
Finn blurted out.
"That's right,"
Jelly said. Finn considered carefully before he spoke.
"Listen, I don't expect you to believe me or anything, but Terry's condition, it has to do with his being a DHI, a Disney host, like I am.
She studied him thoughtfully, but did not interrupt.
I think I can help him. Maybe. Help him wake up.
Is this some kind of joke? Because it's in poor taste, young man. Terry's extremely ill.
Finn, Amanda said, what's going on? Before he went to bed last night, maybe even yesterday afternoon, did Terry get a phone call?
Jelly took another step away from him.
What's with you, boy?
She was not pleased. She looked on the verge of tears.
He did, didn't he? And I'll bet he came away from that call excited, didn't he? Because it was from a girl, wasn't it?
Her?
Jelly said, pointing at Amanda, not realizing she just confirmed that Finn was right.
No, Finn said softly. Not her.
Thoughts crowded his head.
Please don't take him to the hospital until you hear from me tomorrow.
I'm supposed to trust my Terry to a 13-year-old boy?
Jelly said, incredulous.
14,
Finn said.
I'm 14 next month.
22. Back riding their bikes, Finn and Amanda pedaled side by side on the sidewalk, slipping into single file whenever they passed a pedestrian. The afternoon slid toward evening, the sun dragging lower in the sky, the first haze of twilight upon them. Finn felt his whole world dimming.
He's not asleep, is he, Finn?
She asked.
I don't think so. Then what?
Trapped over there, Finn said.
What's that mean? It means we left him, and we shouldn't have, and now he's stuck back there. On this side, he's asleep. Over there, he's still at DHI. Who knows what's happened to him? You think he's been caught or something? I hope not, Finn answered. But this is nothing but bad. Real bad.
Finn felt a cool wind on his back. He craned over his shoulder to look. Though Finn said nothing, Amanda, riding alongside him, said,
I feel it too. Check out your handlebars.
Finn touched his handlebars. Ice cold. His fingers left small patches of vapor behind as he removed them.
Just like the car wash, she said.
Finn didn't need to be told what that sudden chill meant. He scoured the immediate area for any sign of Maleficent. He saw only cars, storefronts, and power lines. Black cars, red cars, blue cars, and white. Small cars, big cars, dull cars, and bright. Where did they come from? Where were they going? Some cars were driving. Some cars were towing.
Do you ever think in rhymes? He asked her,
wondering where that had come from. She glanced over at him, gravely concerned.
What?
He asked.
You're thinking in rhymes?
So what? She answered.
It's one of the signs. It's something...
She caught herself. Her voice trailed off.
What signs?
She allowed her bike to fall behind him, so far that he couldn't see her. So Finn slowed as well, and they dueled this way, Amanda slowing, then Finn slowing to join her, until they had come to a stop.
What do you know about this?
He asked, feeling agitated and impatient.
It's a sign of what?
To the right was a community center, and adjoining it, an enormous skateboard park with a half pipe, a full pipe, jumps, and four tubs. A landscape of smooth concrete basins, like empty swimming pools, interconnected by ramps and tunnels, where a dozen kids were practicing stunts. Amanda said meekly,
Rhyming is... it's one of the signs of... witches.
With that, she rose up onto her pedals and zoomed off, turning in to the skateboard park. The park was full of skaters, full of concrete alligators, kids in hordes riding boards, sun was sinking, growing later. Finn shook his head violently, side to side, trying to clear his thought and push away the rhymes.
What did she just said?
He couldn't remember. All he could hear were rhymes. One thought found its way through. Amanda knows something she isn't telling me. Finn raced to catch her. This is weird, like a man with a beard, green skin and pig's eyes, frog's legs and fireflies, a dark cave with loud cries, a girl with tears in her eyes. Finn caught up to her. Amanda's eyes were red. She'd either been crying or affected by the speed of her riding.
Amanda, I can't tell you,
she said. A motorized minibike zoomed noisily around the corner and dropped into the skate park. The rider was thin and wore a black leather top and pants and a black helmet with a silver mirrored visor that hid his face. The minibike came straight at them, showing no signs of slowing. On the contrary, it was on a collision course. Amanda rose up onto her pedals and dropped her bike into the first big concrete bathtub. Finn followed. They climbed the opposing wall and flew up, airborne. The mini-bike followed. Finn rose from his seat, balanced the bike in the air, tipped forward, and dove into the next big concrete basin. Amanda dropped into the half-pipe to the left. Separated like this, the mini-bike driver had to choose. It came at Finn. The other boarders and bikers stopped what they were doing and watched the contest. Amanda flew down the steep wall of the half-pipe, picking up speed and launching into a high jump. Finn, parallel with her now, yanked his front wheel in mid-air and changed direction upon landing. He joined her, following inside the full pipe. As the minibike entered the full pipe, Finn found the screeching whine of its motor deafening. Out the end of the pipe, riding together now, Finn and Amanda raced to the bottom of the third tub, pushed down onto their seats by centrifugal force. As they raced up the opposing side, they lifted, tipped their weight in unison, and reversed their bikes. Aimed back down into the deep basin, the minibike whining toward them, Amanda bravely reached over with her left arm and grabbed Finn by the forearm. Finn returned the grip.
"You ready for this?"
she asked.
"On three,"
Finn said. They released their brakes on the count of three, zooming toward the oncoming minibike, their arms extended and ready to clothesline the rider. The bikes flew down. The minibike wound its way toward them. Amanda and Finn screamed in unison. At the last possible second, the rider dumped the minibike in a flurry of sparks, slipping under their clasped arms and between the two bikes. The few onlookers let out a wild cheer. Amanda and Finn stopped at the top of the basin and looked back. The driver, lying next to the minibike, appeared okay. He, she, it, stood up, brushed off, and gestured toward the two. Finn felt a pulse of cold fill him, a familiar cold. Amanda shouted something that sounded like a foreign language. She crossed her arms and then threw them forward toward the rider, and the cold stopped abruptly. The leather-clad rider was lifted from the ground and thrown to the concrete.
"Ride!" Amanda hollered at Finn. "Ride and don't look back!"
Finn pedaled off, wondering if he'd just seen Amanda do that.
"Who are you?"
he shouted as their bikes reached the street.
"We've got to split up,"
she said. With that, she pedaled furiously away from him.
23. At dinner that night, Finn brooded at the table, unable to take his mind off recent events. Maybeck's sleeping sickness, Amanda's mysteries, the letters they'd found secretly hidden at both It's a Small World and Splash Mountain. Watching him, his mother wore a look of curiosity, while his father, in typical fashion, ate quietly. Finn stabbed at his food and moved it around on his plate, hoping it might appear eaten.
"How was school today?"
his mother asked. Every night, the same question. Next would come, "Did you do anything fun today? What were your friends up to?"
"Did you do anything fun today?"
she asked brightly. She couldn't stand it when Finn was quiet like this.
"I don't know," Finn answered honestly. "It's all right, I suppose."
"You can do better than that," his father said.
His father always thought Finn could do better at everything. He seemed always to be riding Finn about his grades or his performance on the soccer field. He talked about college scholarships like they were some kind of religion.
"I'm good,"
Finn said, pushing back his plate.
"May I be excused?"
Another part of the secret code. He had no chance of leaving the table without these passwords.
"No snacks later, sweetheart. This is dinner."
"I know," Finn said. He stood up from the table and grabbed his plate. Suddenly his head went all rubbery, as if all his blood was draining from him at once. He thought he might pass out.
"Finn?"
His mother's voice, but in the next county. Then there was her painted mouth moving above him, her voice sounding detached and several octaves lower than normal, like a tape playing at half speed. She'd rushed to his side. The lights in the room dimmed. A power failure? He saw his father, chewed food in his open mouth, looking scared.
"Finn, dear,"
his mother said.
"I'm fine,"
he replied. His mother hovered over him. He felt his parents taking him under his arms and leading him upstairs. Finn's feet flapped and dragged. He felt useless. They led him toward his bed.
"No, no, I don't want to go to sleep."
But his eyes felt so heavy. He closed his eyes, and it happened again. 24. Finn awoke on the same park bench where he'd first met Wayne, at the end of Main Street, across from the fire station. It was nighttime, though the park remained open. He looked down to see his arms and legs faintly glowing. He was his DHI self. Some kid saw him, and he knew he was in for trouble if he didn't get out of there. A flash of light to his right. Finn strained to see through the thick crowds. Always so many people. And, yes,
There it was again. Another flash of light. For an instant, the crowd parted, and he saw Philby waving. Finn dragged himself heavily across the street, still feeling sluggish, leaving the curious kids behind, and caught up with Philby.
"I thought that was you," Philby said, pocketing a flashlight.
"You don't look so hot,"
Finn said.
"Have you tried a mirror?"
"Another brownout?"
Finn asked.
"I assume so."
"We're early,"
Finn said.
"Yeah, but if we're here, chances are the girls are too. We should check the apartment and the teepee."
"But let's do it together,"
Finn suggested.
"Maybeck?"
Philby asked.
"I went to his house," Finn answered. "He's asleep in bed, and they can't wake him up. Tomorrow morning they're going to take him to the hospital and start running tests. We've got to find him before that. Who knows what they'd do to him?"
"Maybeck was caught," Philby said. "And it wasn't security. It was the overtakers. It has to be. Wayne said Maybeck's our computer guy. We know he's been poking around. The overtakers don't want him messing with the DHI server. The brownouts are feeling lousy like this. That's the server doing that. The overtakers are trying to..."
"Kill us?"
Finn said.
"Slow us down. Scare us away."
He didn't sound convinced.
"Then I'd say it's working,"
Finn said.
"So where do we start? The apartment or the teepee?"
Finn looked past Philby at the glowing windows above the fire station.
"Neither,"
Finn said.
"Follow me."
Finn climbed the stairs on the side of the firehouse two at a time.
"I should have thought of this before. He told me he lived here."
"Who?"
Finn knocked on the door. Wayne answered. Philby and Finn were welcomed inside. It was a cozy room, all wood and brass that felt like something from a ship. Wayne wore a heavy wool sweater, khaki pants, and Mickey and Minnie slippers. There were books everywhere, and no television or even a radio. The bed was up in a loft in the very peak of the roof.
"Wow!"
Philby said, looking around. There were Disney toys scattered around, antiques that went back decades. A fabric wall hanging showed off over 1,000 Disney pins.
"I wondered how long it would take you to look me up,"
Wayne said. It seemed almost as if he'd been expecting them. There were 3 teacups by the stove and 3 chairs set out facing one another. Wayne poured them some tea and gestured for the 2 boys to sit down.
"Can you help us find Maybeck?"
Finn asked.
"Was it Maleficent?"
Philby asked. Wayne's eyebrows arched. He did not answer Philby directly.
"What do you know about her?"
He had owl-like circles beneath his ice-blue eyes. He looked ominous and menacing now instead of like the silly old guy Finn had first thought him to be. He smiled thinly and said,
"Amazing things happen when we put our minds to it. There is a saying that seeing is believing, but believing is seeing as well, and touching, and hearing, connecting."
"The witch, Maleficent, has something to do with this,"
Finn said. He told Wayne everything that had happened recently.
"Apparently she has everything to do with this,"
Wayne agreed.
"The overtakers,"
Finn tested.
"There are other overtakers besides Maleficent."
"Too many to count."
"Like the pirates?"
"Worker bees is all. The pirates don't matter much. But you must underestimate nothing. No one. Conviction is the better part of intent. Few battles are won by strength alone. Cunning and knowing your resources can help you overpower the most powerful."
"How do we stop Maleficent?"
Philby asked anxiously. He sipped the tea, liked it, and drank some more.
"Don't get ahead of yourselves," Wayne said.
"Maybeck,"
Finn said.
"They won't want anyone to see him, nor to hear him. Should he call out?"
Philby continued.
"Someplace dark and noisy,"
Finn said.
"One of the attractions,"
Philby said.
"Like Pirates of the Caribbean. Pirates took him."
"It's not dark enough,"
Finn said.
"And where would they hide him?"
"On the boat, maybe,"
Philby said.
"Possibly,"
Wayne said, though his tone of voice suggested that he didn't give the idea much credence.
"Well, listen, Obi-Wan," Philby said sarcastically. "Why don't you tell me and Luke here where to find him, and we'll make for hyperspace."
"Warmer,"
Wayne said to Philby, though he engaged Finn with his eyes.
"Space Mountain,"
Finn said.
"Pitch black and super loud."
Philby sat forward excitedly.
"Is he right? Is that where they've got him? Brilliant!"
Wayne sipped his tea, looking over the cup.
I have no idea where your friend is being kept. It's a big park. Very big.
Finn thought for a moment and then said,
More important, it might be like the teepee inside there. A DHI shadow. That would make Maybeck invisible, easy to hide, to say the least.
If Wayne knew any answers, his face revealed nothing.
It's a place to start, Finn said. We have to start somewhere.
Wayne said,
They're keeping you from solving the fable. You see that, don't you? Distracting you.
And if we solve it?
Philby asked.
When we solve it?
Finn said, looking right at Wayne.
Rescue your friend. Solve the fable. Only then will we know what's expected of you.
Finn and Philby wouldn't be entering Space Mountain through the front door. Wayne told them of a trap door that existed in the very top of the pointed dome roof. The roof hatch was used by maintenance, and to his knowledge, had never been locked. If the boys could climb to the first level of the dome, about 15 feet up, they'd reached a metal ladder that ran up the back of the dome to the pinnacle. From there, they could enter the ride's interior. At Wayne's suggestion, the boys borrowed some ropes from the firehouse. Then they snuck through shadows, carrying the heavy ropes over their shoulders, and reached the backside of the attraction. Crouching in some bushes, looking at the steepness of the roof and the small metal ladder that led to the top, Finn said,
The overtakers have got to assume we'll come from Maybeck. But to them we're kids, don't forget. They'll have patrols, cameras maybe. So when we do this, we do it quickly.
The roof was shaped something like a magician's hat, with a wide brim and a conical peaked crown. There were antennae on top. Philby proved his climbing skills by tossing one of the ropes over a metal railing on the brim part of the roof. He tied it off.
We're set,
he announced, waving Finn over. Finn, who was not big on heights, shinnied up the rope. In short order, he reached the brim of the roof. He threw a leg over and pulled himself up. Philby followed silently and without incident. They kept away from the edge of the roof, where they might be spotted, as Philby pulled up the rope and stashed it out of sight. Quickly they ascended the white metal ladder that ran to the peak. Attached to the roof, it ran at the same steep angle as the cone. They reached the top, and sure enough, there was a metal trapdoor, exactly as Wayne had described it. Finn reached for the handle and pulled. It lifted open. He peered down into a black square, completely void of light.
"Who's going first?"
Philby asked, his voice breaking. Finn led the way down the metal ladder. Philby followed, and they descended silently. After a moment, Finn's eyes began to adjust. They were way up inside the pointy hat part of the domed ceiling, a gigantic space that contained the entire Space Mountain roller coaster track. He made out a few red exit signs, but they were not bright enough to see by. The track was a tangle of metal fringed by catwalks and supported by towering I-beams and steel columns. Finn felt as if he were inside a complicated clock. They reached a catwalk, a path that led along the roller coaster track, with a metal mesh floor, and followed it to a set of metal stairs leading down. This connected to another catwalk. Suddenly, it felt as if they'd entered a maze.
This is crazy, Philby whispered. The place is huge. Maybeck could be anywhere. I'm not so sure about that, Finn said. Agreed, it's huge, but look around. Where are you going to hide him?
Now that his eyes had fully adjusted, he could make out the size and scope of the complicated track, but it was all exposed and open, not a good place to hide someone.
Hey,
Finn said, holding out his hand, seeing his hand.
Yeah, Philby said. Well, now?
But he moved his own arm around to show Finn that the metal broke up the imaging. His arm appeared to be in pieces, separated by black stripes. The DHI projection in here was spotty at best.
You take that side, he instructed Philby. We'll meet in the middle over there.
He pointed out a low spot in the ride where the track turned sharply left.
If something goes wrong, Philby cautioned, we get out of here and meet at the apartment. Got it.
Finn descended yet another ladder and then followed a catwalk toward one of the exit signs, using it as a beacon. The catwalks reminded him of submarine movies. If he were hiding someone, Finn thought, he'd stash his hostage close to where Guest made the most noise, in a place where any shouts for help would likely go unheard. Finn searched the track overhead for just such a spot. Then he leaned over the rail of the catwalk and looked below. Not far below him, and slightly to his left, he noticed an indistinct dark shape that, as he approached, he realized was geometric, a large rectangle. Now he recognized it as a booth or storage room. Like the catwalks, its walls were of heavy wire mesh. Finn climbed over the rail, lowered himself and dropped to a catwalk below. He reached out and touched the wire mesh. It was covered in a greasy dust that stuck to his fingers. It looked like a large garden shed, about 6 feet tall, 10 feet deep, and 15 feet long. On the front of the shed, a heavy canvas was hung that prevented Finn from seeing inside. The canvas was tied down on the inside. Finn located the only door, which was wood-framed and also covered with wire mesh. He felt his way down the door and struck a piece of heavy metal, a padlock. Locked out.
Psst!
Finn tried to signal Philby, but got no answer. Finn looked around, off into the dark, realizing he'd completely lost track of his friend. He tried again.
Psst!
A muffled voice made him spin around. It was coming from inside the screen shed.
Philby!
Finn tried again, a little louder. He heard the scuffle of feet. Said the muffled voice behind him.
Maybach? It's me, Finn!
Finn struggled with the lock again, and then remembered. He didn't need to unlock the door. Finn closed his eyes and concentrated on his being made of light. Nothing but light. And he walked through the wall, just as he'd swum through the water without feeling the effect of the current. Once through, he realized how much darker it was inside the shed because of the canvas. Finn felt his way around, stepping over boxes and coils and pieces of metal. The muffled calls for help became more urgent.
"I'm right here,"
Finn said, turning toward the sound. Close by now, Finn squatted, felt around and touched an arm. He jumped back, fell over, and knocked something loose, making a loud sound.
"Mmm,"
said Maybach. Wiggling as he was, a piece of Maybach's DHI, his left side, suddenly showed. Finn lunged forward and untied the gag.
"Oh, man,"
Maybach said, the gag slipping off.
"You okay?"
"No, I'm famished. I'm thirsty. But thank you, man. Thank you."
Finn untied Maybach's wrists and ankles. Maybach said,
"Let's book it."
"We gotta find Philby. He's in here someplace looking for you, too."
Maybach pulled on the locked door, but it didn't budge.
"But how'd you—"
"Right through the wall,"
Finn explained.
"That's fine for you, but what about me? I can't go through a dumb wall."
"Sure you can."
"No, I can't."
"You're gonna have to."
Maybach stared at the dark canvas and the locked door.
"Are you telling me I could have just walked out of here all along?"
"Not if you'd convinced yourself you were trapped,"
Finn replied. Maybach reached out. His hand struck the canvas.
"You've gotta lose the attitude, Maybach,"
Finn instructed.
"You're only hitting that wall because you think that's what's supposed to happen."
"I don't have an attitude."
He waited for some support from Finn.
"Do I?"
Finn demonstrated. First, he reached out and touched the canvas. Then, he reached over a second time, and his hand and forearm passed right through up to his elbow.
"I do not have an attitude,"
Maybach repeated.
"Prove it,"
Finn said. He was worried about the noise Philby was making trying to get over to the shed. The bumps and bangs seemed amplified in this echo chamber. On Maybach's sixth try, he walked through the wall of the enclosure. Once on the other side, he bent over, as if in pain.
"You okay?"
Finn asked. Giddy with the accomplishment, Maybach started giggling.
"What a dumb jerk. I could have walked out of there all along."
"Not with your hands tied. That rope is from this side. The rope would have stopped you from getting through the wall,"
Maybach blurted out.
"It was Jez."
"What was Jez?"
"She called," Maybach said.
"Called your house?"
Finn said, having figured out some of this on his own.
"Last night, just before you crossed over."
"Said she'd meet me."
"When you checked your watch,"
Finn said, speculating.
"The line you fed us about having a hot date? You really did have a hot date."
"I dished the girls at It's a Small World. We were going to meet, Jez and me, at the carousel. But all of a sudden I was so cold, I could barely move, like slow motion."
"Yeah, cold,"
Finn said. He was thinking. Been there. Done that. 25. For nearly a week, the kids met inside the park after going to bed, but only for a matter of minutes. As quickly as possible, they would use the button to return home, having looked for no more clues. They caught up on sleep. They did their homework. They rejoined their families. Maybach's abduction had worn them out and frightened them to the point of not wanting to continue. They overcame the reluctance only when Philby showed up at one of their meetings,
telling of a newspaper story he'd read about an electrical company power station that had been attacked and drained of all its power.
"It's not a coincidence," he told the others. "This is spreading beyond the park."
On Saturday morning, the girls decided to use their complimentary passes to enter the Magic Kingdom legally. As kids, not DHIs. That felt safer. They wore disguises in order to keep fans from spotting them and carried 3D glasses to wear on the rides. As they stood outside, waiting to board the many adventures of Winnie the Pooh, a cartoony voice came over the speakers saying,
"Happy Wednesday!"
It was this, and other references on the ride, that had led them to pick it as the most wind-oriented ride in the park. Wind was the third clue in the Stonecutter's fable. They sat down in the car, and the ride began. Black lights made their teeth glow white and their skin and clothing almost disappear.
"Glasses,"
Willa announced, donning hers. Charlene followed.
"You look right, I'll look left,"
Willa coached.
"If we see any letters, big letters in an unexpected place, we're supposed to write them down."
Charlene said,
"I've got it."
She sounded nervous, and Willa understood her concern. The rides had been anything but friendly since this hunt had begun. As they traveled along, doors swung open to admit their car into each new scene. Reaching the third scene, Charlene realized she heard no one talking. She looked back and saw there was no one in the car behind them. Rising to her knees, she saw no one in the car behind that one either. Yet the line out front had been packed.
"Willa?"
"Over there,"
Willa said, pointing out a large, colorful tree drawn onto a panel. She lifted and dropped her 3D glasses onto her nose in order to make sure. But yes, there was a single letter drawn into the leaves of the tree. She called out quickly,
"It's an S."
"S?"
Charlene asked, puzzled.
"But look behind us."
Willa was too excited to look back.
"There's no one behind us?"
Charlene announced.
"No one in the car is behind us. Why not?"
Willa pulled a folded piece of paper from her pocket and scribbled down S. As she did, a drop of water appeared on the paper. Then another. And another.
"Behind us!"
Charlene cried urgently. Willa looked back. She looked up. More water. The doors to the next scene popped open and shut. They were in the rain scene. Rain drawn in long lines down the walls. Rain falling from the ceiling.
"Since when is this part of the ride?"
Willa complained, stuffing the paper into her pocket. At that moment, their car stopped moving.
"What's happening?"
Charlene whined.
"Why are we stopping?"
The few light raindrops changed into a downpour. At first, it seemed funny, but then it wasn't simply rain. It was a torrent. Buckets. Both girls gasped for breath through a steady stream of water pouring down onto them. It was hard to breathe without coughing.
"This isn't right,"
Willa cried. Now the water beneath their car began to rise. The car lifted, floating. Charlene lunged forward nervously, nearly capsizing them. She leaned out of the car and pushed against the large doors to the next scene.
"They're stuck! They won't open!"
As the water rose at an astonishing rate, the car floated higher and higher. Sparks flew as electrical wires were submerged.
"Stay in the car!"
Willa hollered. Light sockets sparked and zapped.
"We could be electrocuted!"
The car floated quickly toward the ceiling. Willa understood the worst of it. The higher they rose, the less available the air would be. They would either drown or suffocate.
"Willa!"
Charlene moaned.
"I know."
The car rose higher still. Sparks flew again as more lights went under.
"We're in trouble,"
Willa said, surprisingly calm.
"Duh!"
"We need a way out."
"Just now occurred to you, did it?"
The rain fell like a waterfall. The car was now less than 3 feet from the ceiling. Another foot or two and the car would be pinned with the girls inside it. Why won't the doors to the next scene open? Willa thought.
"Sit still,"
she warned Charlene. Studying the large scene doors, Willa stood up in the car. Charlene hollered at her to sit down as the car threatened to tip over. Willa grabbed the overhead pipes to stabilize the car. She then pulled hand over hand to draw the car closer to the doors. But as the water rose, with so little room, Willa was forced back down into her seat. No time. Water streamed down her neck and shoulders as she spotted a sawed-off length of pipe jammed across the top of the large doors, blocking them and holding them shut. The rain was nothing more than the emergency sprinkler system gone wild. All this trouble could be easily explained. the sprinklers malfunctioning. Maleficent had done her job well. Willa pulled on the sawed-off length of pipe, but couldn't budge it. She called for a stunned Charlene to help as the water rose steadily higher. Together, they pulled. Water spilled over the side of the car, quickly filling it. Willa chanted, "One, two." On three, both girls heaved on the pipe, pulling it free. The doors blew open. The girls fell back into the car as a few thousand gallons of water rushed into the next scene, and the car rode the leading edge of the wave like a surfboard. The plume of water spun and turned and twisted its way out toward the ride's finish, leveling off as it reached the exit. The car lowered and settled into the track, right where it had started. The waiting guests stood there drenched head to toe. A lake of water had flooded the pavement outside the attraction. In all the confusion, the two girls hurried from the car and ran for their lives. 26. Late that afternoon, nearing the dinner hour, the DHIs met in Finn's guest room in the virtual Magic Kingdom. This had become something of a routine for them. Lately, Charlene's and Willa's characters took the couch, while Finn, Maybeck, and Philby stood and moved around the room. A text bubble appeared above Willa. She told them about nearly being drowned at Winnie the Pooh, and that she had called Philby prior to this meeting and had told him about the S she and Charlene had discovered. It was Philby's job to make sense of the clues. Philby's character explained that he'd run the letters F, M, E, Y, I, R, and S through an internet anagram generator. The program rearranged the letters into every possible combination and then printed up the results. Fill it up. There are only two decent possibilities. My fries and yes firm. Neither makes much sense. Finn. So we need more. The last clue mentioned in the fable is stone. Any ideas what ride that might be? Fill it up. I thought about Tom Sawyer Island. There are rocks over there. But then I realized it has to be Thunder Mountain. I mean, give me a break. Talk about rocks. That place is all rocks. Finn. So we'll start there, at Thunder Mountain. Philby and I. My best. Sounds good to me. Angel Face 13. But we'll all cross over, just as we do every night. Are we supposed to just wait for you? Finn could just imagine Charlene whining as she typed. Finn. At some point, we'll need to get Wayne. He lives above the fire station. By the time Philby and I are off Thunder Mountain, we should have all the letters. We'll get back together and try to solve the riddle. If we do, if we're successful, we'll need Wayne. He should be told what's going on. My best. I can get over there and give him a heads up. The girls can keep a lookout from the apartment. It looks right down Main Street. We'll set up some kind of signal in case they see trouble. That'll help. Fill it up. Sounds like a plan. The five characters formed a huddle in the middle of Finn's guest room. They all put their hands into the center, like players on a sports team. And then they left the room. Finn headed downstairs and found his mother bent over the kitchen sink doing dishes. She asked,
"Do you want to help me?"
"Sure."
Finn bagged and took out the trash. He cleaned the kitty litter. He was about to put some dishes away when his mother reminded him where his hands had just been. So he washed his hands and was putting away some dishes when she said,
"We need to talk."
"Sure.
Let's sit at the table."
The table? This was bad. Very bad.
"I need something explained to me, and I want you to be honest," she said.
The kitchen table grew impossibly long in his mind, as if his mother were a judge way down at the far end.
"Okay,"
he said.
"The laundry."
"Yeah? What about it?"
"I'm your mother, Finn. Each day you come home from school, I look at you, both because I love you and because it's my job to keep your clothes clean. If your pants are clean, for instance, I say nothing, and you can wear them another time. If they're dirty, I ask you to put them in the laundry."
"So?"
"Remember, I need you to be honest. That's more important to me than anything else." "Mom..." "I'd rather not involve your father, but if you insist on lying to me, I most certainly will."
She paused, and then said,
"Your clothes are dirtier in the morning than they are when you go to bed. A week ago, they were damp and smelled like... well... awful."
Evidence.
He hadn't thought about this aspect of his adventures. He had tried to keep himself looking the same, taking showers in the morning to get the dirt off. Yet he had just tossed his clothes into the hamper. Now he saw the stupidity of that.
"It's not what you think, Mom.
enlighten me.
I haven't lied to you. Not exactly.
You either have or haven't. There's no in-between when it comes to the truth.
I have not snuck out of the house. I promise.
He saw a tremendous relief in her eyes, but still her voice quavered.
Finn, I swear, Mom, I have not snuck out of the house. I told you I wouldn't, and I haven't. Finn, I have worn my clothes to bed a few times in the past couple of weeks. If they look more wrinkled in the morning than they did when I went to bed.
Wrinkled? They're filthy, wet, with holes in them. I'm sorry, but that doesn't sound like the truth to me. Let's start over one more time. Please, trust me. You can tell me whatever it is. Whether or not we involve your father, well, we'll see.
It stays between the two of us?
Finn asked nervously.
I gotta hear you say it, Mom.
It stays between the two of us, she said.
Okay, but you're not gonna like it.
Finn, just tell me.
Finn drew in a deep breath, wondering if he actually should tell her. What choice was there? The evidence had busted him. He needed to explain it without getting himself into more trouble. He said,
Something crazy happened when they made the DHIs out of us. The five kids.
He watched her face grow curious and concerned.
When we go to sleep, we aren't exactly asleep. We wake up in Disney World. As DHIs. As holograms.
Now she seemed to be fighting a smile.
Trouble is, whatever happens there carries over here. So when I get all dirty there, I end up dirty back here. But you can't tell Dad, remember? You promised.
For a moment, it didn't appear she was breathing. Then her lips unpuckered, her nostrils flared, and she grinned.
That is the lamest, though the most creative excuse you've ever tried.
Finn stared at her, dumbfounded. So this is what he got for telling the truth.
Mom, it's the truth.
She tried to compose herself, lost it to a creeping smile, and then suddenly grew very serious as Finn's expression did not change. Now she seemed to believe him.
The burn you saw on my arm. A laser fired at me inside the park at night. I have a bruise on my leg where a doll bit me.
A doll?
There was that twitching smile again.
It's a small world, one of those dolls.
I see.
He couldn't understand it. She didn't believe him.
You said you wanted the truth,
he reminded her. Maybe she thought he was losing his mind.
No doctors,
Finn said, defending himself.
You actually believe this?
How do you explain my muddy clothes, huh, Mom? I am not sneaking out. I knew you wouldn't believe me.
His reasoning clearly perplexed her.
Let me get this straight, she said.
He interrupted.
You won't get it straight. Because we haven't gotten it straight. The five of us. You can't stop it, Mom. I can't stop it. None of us can. It just happens. And until we solve... There's stuff that's got to happen before this is going to stop.
Finn, you're worrying me.
You promised you wouldn't tell Dad.
But I thought... I don't know what I thought.
You promised. Just remember you promised,
he added.
The wet clothes. Tom Sawyer Island. You know that lake around it?
This is not funny, Finn, okay? A plus for originality. You really had me going. Now, please, tell me the truth. The real truth.
There's no in-between when it comes to the truth,
he said, quoting her.
If you can't handle the truth, it's not my fault.
Finn, do not leave. Not like this,
she demanded as he stood from the kitchen table.
Where are you going?
She called out, stopping him in the doorway. Finn turned and faced his troubled mother.
There's only one way to end this. To get this over with.
He hesitated, thinking of all the things he could explain if she would only believe him.
I'm going to sleep.
If Finn had to tackle Thunder Mountain with any of his fellow hosts, he was glad it was Philby. Philby was the kind of smart that made other school kids ask him to do their homework. By now, he would have done as much internet research on the ride as possible. They'd both ridden it dozens of times, but climbing around the ride at night was altogether different, as they learned the hard way at It's a Small World and Splash Mountain. They stood at the entrance to the ride. Moonlight glinted on the tracks. Finn said,
The letters we're missing could be anywhere, on any stone, any rock.
You got it.
They were surrounded by maybe 10,000 rocks.
Anything I should know before we start?
Finn asked, knowing there had to be.
Philby said.
There are security cameras, a lot of them. Some are infrared and can see at night. It's like Splash Mountain. We can't leave the track. That's all we've got to worry about.
Finn knew that wasn't the case, but he didn't say anything. He didn't want to jinx them. The boys started down the roller coaster's track. It rose and twisted and turned, extremely tricky to walk. They both wore their 3D glasses and looked everywhere possible for clues. Philby in the lead, occasionally stopped and listened and looked around. It made Finn nervous. They continued along the empty roller coaster track, sometimes walking, almost crab-like. They made it through two long climbs without incident. The roller coaster rose higher and higher.
"Where are we?" Finn asked. "A little over halfway, I'm thinking."
They stopped to rest. The moonlight shone down onto the red rocks. Neither boy saw any letters written on the stone. Finn said,
"Hey, guess what? We haven't got a clue."
"That's a sick joke."
They entered a canyon with steep walls. It grew darker the farther in they went. Finn felt his nerves tighten. He didn't exactly love roller coasters. Walking one in the dark didn't help matters. The boys lowered themselves down a short drop in the tracks as the canyon widened. The scene was part desert floor, with cactuses and mining equipment, and part rock canyon. Massive stone walls rose on all sides.
"Too cool,"
Philby said, lifting and dropping his glasses onto his nose and pointing. At first, Finn thought he meant the Indian drawings and the dinosaur fossil that stuck out from the farthest rock wall. But then he looked more closely. The letters. T. P. N. Each letter appeared to be engraved on its own rock in the ride's rock slide. Finn checked with and without the glasses. This was definitely their clue.
"Way to go! Okay, that's it," he said. "Let's get out of here."
"We're closer to the end than the start of the ride. It's over this next rise. We'll get off the tracks there without being seen by the cameras."
"Okay, let's just go,"
Finn said, wanting to be gone. Something wasn't right here. He couldn't identify what it was, but he felt it. They struggled up the roller coaster track, for it was suddenly much slipperier than before.
"Almost there,"
Philby called from the top. The next scene looked like Yellowstone Park. Geysers spit into the air. There were pools of water in luminous shades of green and yellow. The ground beneath them shook. Philby touched the rail to see if it was vibrating, meaning that the ride had turned itself on. He shook his head.
"Maybe it's just an effect. You know, Yellowstone, earthquakes and stuff like that."
"I'd have read about that," Philby declared. "I don't think so."
The ground shook even more furiously, and now Finn was scared. Too much weird stuff had happened on the rides for him not to be afraid. A few yards down the track, Finn felt the first touch of cold creep into his legs.
"Philby!"
"Yeah, I'll feel it too,"
Philby answered. With his legs going numb, Finn found it hard to walk. He whispered,
"The only time we felt this before."
"Maleficent,"
Philby answered.
"Yeah."
Water at the top of the geysers turned first to ice, and then snow, which fell thickly. Finn's cold legs were nearly impossible to move.
"We've got to get out of here."
He could feel the chill seeping into his chest, his breathing tight and difficult. Too much longer, and he wouldn't be going anywhere. Philby stopped them both and said,
"Listen to that!"
Like something cracking apart, Finn thought.
Ice?
It didn't sound exactly like ice.
"We've got to hurry!"
Philby barked out.
"Hurry? I can barely move!"
The cracking sound grew frighteningly loud. It came from the scene behind them, the Utah desert scene they'd just left. They cautiously climbed back up the small rise in the track, to look back from where they'd just come. They peered over the rails, following that loud cracking sound. Across the way, rocks splintered around the enormous dinosaur fossil.
"That's a T-Rex,"
Philby whispered.
40 feet long, 18 feet high, 58 teeth. That's 40 miles an hour.
Finn didn't need all the facts. Sometimes he wished Philby would just keep them to himself. The two boys watched in horror as, one by one, the bones vibrated and broke free from the rock. They did not fall. They did not break. They held together as one giant...
"Run!"
Philby shouted. A cloud of dust rose behind them as the ground trembled with a rhythmic clomp. Clomp.